Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK World Radio Japan, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Russia's Sputnik Radio, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. The International Atomic Energy Agency says it has inspected and collected samples at an Iranian site suspected of storing undeclared nuclear materials. Japan's Maritime Defense Force and the Indian Navy have been conducting joint drills in the Northern Arabian Sea. The former Soviet republics of Armenia and Azerbaijan have begun a war over disputed territories, with Turkey being accused of aiding in the fighting. NHK Japan.
The International Atomic Energy Agency says it has inspected and collected samples at a site where Iran is suspected of storing undeclared nuclear material. It is the second visit since the two sides struck an agreement aimed at enhancing mutual trust. The IAEA Director General suggested it will take months to determine whether the collected samples contain nuclear substances. Iran's willingness to cooperate with the IAEA has been praised by many countries, but the United States has been trying to rally international support against Tehran. U.S. President Donald Trump pulled his country out of a landmark nuclear deal in 2018. Since then, it has reimposed stifling economic sanctions. Japan's Maritime Self-Defense Force and the Indian Navy have concluded a joint exercise in the Northern Arabian Sea aimed at strengthening security cooperation. Frigates, destroyers, and fighter jets took part in the 3-day exercise that concluded on Monday. Its goal was to enhance interoperability and joint operational skills. It was the 4th edition of the drill. Earlier this month, the two countries signed a key agreement allowing their security forces to access each other's bases for logistics support. There are growing concerns over China's military activities in the Indian Ocean and Indo-Pacific regions. India and China are also locked in a tense military standoff in the northern Himalayas. The death toll from 3 days of heavy fighting between Azerbaijan and Armenia over disputed territory has reached 100, including 16 civilians. International mediation efforts are underway to seek a breakthrough in the situation. The fighting between the two former Soviet republics over the Nagorno-Karabakh region erupted on Sunday. The area lies in western Azerbaijan, but is mainly populated by ethnic Armenians. Russian President Vladimir Putin is urging a ceasefire. He spoke with Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan by telephone on Tuesday, their second such talk since the crisis unfolded. Russia has strong influence in the region. Putin expressed serious concerns over the situation and called for an immediate halt to the hostilities. Pashinyan claims Turkish troops in Azerbaijan have been leading the military operations. Turkey, another regional power, has expressed its willingness to fully support Azerbaijan. But Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev says Turkey is not a part of the conflict in any form and that there is no need for its involvement. Meanwhile, the UN Security Council called on Armenia and Azerbaijan to immediately halt the fighting and resume talks without preconditions. In a statement, the Council expressed concern over reports of large-scale military actions and expressed regret over the loss of life and the effects on the civilian population. The Council members also backed the UN Secretary General's earlier call to immediately stop the fighting. and they expressed full support for a central role for the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe in resolving the conflict.
Those reports are from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at either 5975-7245 or 11970, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. First, brief reports on the Azerbaijani war and France. Protesters demand abortion rights in Mexico City. Belarus has suspended independent media. And some COVID updates. Shock at the U.S. presidential debate was a main topic on all international broadcasters. Here is a short critique from Germany. The United Nations has begun a major biodiversity summit to attempt to tackle the unprecedented environmental degradation. None of the previously set targets for 2020 have been met. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
French President Emmanuel Macron has condemned comments on Turkey on the latest flare-up in the Caucasus as reckless and dangerous. That's after Turkey voiced support for Azerbaijan's efforts to take control of Nagorno-Karabakh from Armenian separatists. Dozens of people have been reported killed in the worst clashes since seen in the disputed region in decades. Protesters clashed with police in Mexico City as hundreds of women marched through the capital demanding the decriminalization of abortion. Ranks of female police officers used pepper spray against the demonstrators. Abortion is banned in most of Mexico, except under certain circumstances such as sexual assault.
Authorities in Belarus have suspended the country's main independent news outlet for 3 months. While the website's coverage of more than 7 weeks of protests against the Belarusian government frequently went viral, the outlet now says it intends to continue operating.
Well, there was a 61% increase in positive COVID-19 cases in England's latest weekly data. Results from the country's test and trace scheme show more than 31,300 people tested positive for COVID-19 in mid-September. Meanwhile, in Italy, a proposal has been put forward by the country's prime minister to extend the COVID-19 state of emergency until the end of January 2021. Germany has classified individual regions in 11 EU countries as high-risk areas due to the high number of corona infections. Belgium, Iceland, Wales, and Northern Ireland are now included on that list.
We begin tonight with the fallout from America's debate debacle. U.S. presidential candidate Joe Biden has described President Donald Trump's performance in Tuesday night's televised debate as a national embarrassment. The discussion over issues including the coronavirus, race relations, and the economy quickly descended into a series of interruptions and insults, prompting horrified reactions from the U.S. and beyond.
We are watching this, of course, from here, from Europe. What is this doing, this debate, to the stature of the United States in the world?
A reporter said unedifying in the report, and I think that is very much the impression that you get. I mean, here in democratic Europe, for instance, you know, the United States has always been seen as a pioneer in democracy, and there are many, many strong critics of Donald Trump here. He's not popular in Europe, and I think this will be seen as another piece of evidence that American democracy is in a pretty tattered state. But I think perhaps even more dangerous is in non-democratic parts of the world. You know, in China, for instance, that, you know, is holding up its system of authoritarianism as the better way. They can pretty easily point to this debate and say, is that what you want? Is democracy really what you want, or isn't our way better?
Right, Richard DeWalker, DW Chief International Editor. Thank you. The United Nations is gearing up to host a major biodiversity summit after world leaders pledged earlier this week to tackle environmental degradation and protect the natural world. Well, the mostly virtual event kicked off in the UN's General Assembly Hall in New York just a few moments ago. Most delegates are attending online and are set to discuss strategies to reverse dramatic losses to biodiversity. And I want to talk more about this with Ajit Niranjan from DW Environment. Good to have you here with us. Why are leaders meeting?
So this is a major summit to work out how best to protect nature for the coming decades. It's set a roadmap, really, for how to reverse these trends of unprecedented decline of nature, so this accelerating extinction of species. And it's really to set the groundwork for a big meeting in China next year in Kunming, where world leaders will sign an agreement that's kind of comparable to this 2015 Paris Climate Agreement, so really this international framework for how best to protect nature. They had very concrete targets for 2020, which they mostly have not actually met. So of all the 20 targets, I mean, none of them were met at all. Six of them were partly achieved. One of them's going back in the wrong direction. And so it's kind of not necessarily new targets, but more just reaffirming what we've already said. There are some concrete actions kind of taking place. But I mean, it's important to put that in context, right? So pollution is still at unsafe levels. Governments are still subsidizing businesses that damage ecosystems. Coral reefs, for instance, are still dying. So it's mainly a case of trying to take what we already know about how to protect nature and implement it.
So what's going to change this time around? You know, why would they implement it this time when they haven't done it in the recent past?
So the rhetoric is noticeably stronger. So, I mean, I think on Monday, 65 world leaders, including Germany's Angela Merkel, signed a letter where they described the situation we're in as a planetary emergency. They talk about this kind of unsustainable production and consumption as being the key drivers of biodiversity loss. And I mean, this is related to climate change as well, obviously. I mean, they say this requires immediate, urgent and immediate global action. But then you look at some of the proposals in that letter and you see that they want to eliminate plastic leakage into the oceans by 2050. That's three decades away. So, I mean, whether that's immediate or urgent is, I mean, you can understand why activists maybe are kind of skeptical of some of these conferences.
Now, what do scientists say? How big are the changes required to keep what biodiversity we still have intact?
Enormous. So if you look at the scale of the problem, firstly, a report from the World Wildlife Fund a couple of weeks ago found that two-thirds of the world's populations of wild mammals, birds, amphibians, fish, reptiles, it's fallen by two-thirds since 1970, so in the space of 50 years. And, I mean, the scientists last year, when they released this big global assessment of the state of life on Earth, they called for transformative changes. And this really goes into every aspect of society. So we're not just talking about individual conservation efforts. They say that this requires steering away from the current limited paradigm of economic growth. So we're really talking about changing concepts like GDP, maybe, that world leaders today at this meeting are still relying on, they're still using this. So, I mean, it talks about changes that are at a much bigger scale than what's currently being discussed.
Not asking for a metamorphosis, basically, of the world economy. All right, Ajit Niranjan, thank you so much.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. On to Sputnik Radio. Afshin Ratansi interviewed Palestinian ambassador to the UK, Hussam Zomlet. He discusses the Abraham Accords signed by the UAE, Bahrain, and Israel, which were facilitated by Donald Trump. Why normalization of relations by the UAE, Bahrain, and Israel hinder Palestine's quest for statehood and an end to Israel's occupation? The Trump administration's treatment of Palestinians, and the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Sputnik Radio.
On Saturday's show, we spoke to former Israeli Prime Minister and Defense Minister Ehud Barak about the Abraham Accords that normalized relations between Israel and the UAE and Bahrain. Before terminating the interview, he expressed his support for the Accords and urged the Palestinian leadership to use this moment to negotiate with Israel. But now let's hear from the Palestinian side. Joining me now via Skype from London is the Palestinian ambassador to the UK, formerly the PLO's man in Washington, Hussam Zomlot. Why do you think the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain now recognize diplomatically the Israeli state?
It is primarily, they should call it that, election favors to Netanyahu and Trump, because normalization is an act that was always meant to reward Israel for ending its occupation. That reward now is rewarding illegality, is rewarding the occupation, the colonization, the besiegement of our people in Gaza, the de-Palestinization of Jerusalem. We are now no longer trying to create a just situation. We are just rewarding the current status quo and reality. That's why we rejected it, and we believe it was a major, major setback in our efforts collectively to actually reach a genuine lasting peace. Everybody knew that Israel will not heed our calls for peace unless either it has a carrot or it has a major stick. Taking that carrot at this point in time, rewarded for absolutely nothing except illegality, claiming falsely that Israel has stopped annexation when annexation is happening on the ground on a daily basis. Only in the last few weeks, Israel has announced the building of 12,000 new settlement units, illegal, deep in the West Bank. The creeping annexations are happening right in front of our eyes. So please, kid me not and fool me not. We have not given any mandate, as our president said in his speech to the UN. We have given no mandate to anyone to speak on our behalf. This has been a conflict between the Palestinian people and the occupier. There is an occupied and occupier, a colonized and colonizer, a besieged and a besieger, a killer and a killed. We remain to be absolutely committed to international legitimacy. We believe in multilateralism. We learned the lesson of the Second World War. We think when the world comes together and decides collectively is way better than when it doesn't. The problem is not in the international system. The international order, the rules-based order, was established, so we learn never again what we did to each other in the Second World War and in the First World War. And the premise of that order is the inadmissibility of acquiring land by force. That's the heart of it. Now, the problem is not the order. The problem is the enforcement of the law. That's the issue. And here, your question about the position of the UK, which is commendable. I mean, only last week, the Minister for Middle East and the Foreign Office, James Cleverly, confirmed the UK position with ending Israel's occupation, a state of Palestine on the 1967 borders, with East Jerusalem as its capital, and resolving the issue of refugees justly according to international standards. Now, we agree with the UK position. The issue is words are not enough for Israel, and resolutions are not enough. We need enforcement.
Obviously, brave, some would say, given we want a trade deal with the United States after Brexit, but obviously Britain is selling record amounts of arms to Israel. I want to get on to your leader, Mahmoud Abbas. He said it was a stab in the back. Isn't it really a stab in the front, the so-called Abraham Accords?
Historically, we have very good relations with our Arab brothers and sisters. We didn't change. Some of them have unilaterally changed, and we are where we are. We are absolutely, we consider ourselves to be proud Arabs, both Christians and Muslims, and we define ourselves as the Palestinian Arab nation. We know the hearts and the feelings and the support and the solidarity and the connection between us and the Arab peoples. And after the announcement of these accords, we saw what happened in Bahrain. I mean, the most trending hashtag was Bahrain is against normalization. Normalization is a treason. So we know we have the Arab world. And for us, the relationship between us and the Arab world, the Bahraini people, the Emirati people, goes beyond the politics. I mean, this is about civilization, about history, about religion, about culture, about language, about hopes for the future. What connects between us and the Emiratis and the Bahrainis? We need to level the field with Israel, and together with the Arab world, and even with our Arab peace initiative that we offered to Israel in 2002, already 18 years ago, even that was not heeded in Israel. So you tell me, by these unilateral acts by some countries to normalize Israel's illegality and to reward Israel for its oppression against the Palestinians, we have advanced the cause of peace? That's absolutely nonsense. The people of Palestine are on their land. We are on our land. And Israel knows this best. I mean, they could strike these abracadabras, almost magician-like deals, as if peace has prevailed in the Middle East. Even some of your Israeli guests have been saying that this does not really bring a genuine, real peace, and it doesn't. We will continue. And by the way, as much as this is a crisis for us, the Trump's onslaught on our rights, his legitimization of Israel's settlements and annexation, Netanyahu's confirmation only minutes after the announcement about the normalization with Emirates and Bahrain that the annexation is on the table. It's a matter of when, not if. All this is a crisis, but it also brings an opportunity. The first is clarity by Israel and its main benefactor, that is the U.S. You have seen that we have agreed among all Palestinian political factions to convene elections within 6 months. You have seen our friends worldwide, including here in the UK, in the parliament last week, and their very strong support of Palestine. So this creates for us also a wide range of many entities worldwide who, like us, see Trump to be an anomaly, see Trump to be a bully. We will not succumb to these pressures. We have withstood the Trump pressure. As you said in your introduction, I was the ambassador in the U.S. I know personally how much the Trump and the Trump team have tried with us, all the way from cutting all funding to moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem to defunding UNRWA even closing our mission itself in Washington, you know, revoking the visas of my own children while they were in the middle of the school year in Washington. All this is blackmail, but we would stand because for us, the choice is very clear. Either we choose to go with such bully or we stand tall for our rights and dignity. And we believe we will be rewarded in the end. This is a bad time. It's not our moment under the sun. We realize how difficult things all over. But we will do one thing, and one thing primarily, to steadfast, because what we have to lose is peace, is real peace. And we are really interested in genuine, real peace. We want to see normal relations in the region, the whole region. We want to see a region that is thriving in prosperity. We want to address the issues of our youth and women and education and health. We just discussed the issue of the coronavirus in Gaza. I mean, our people in Gaza are living in the most horrific open-air prison for the last 14 years. We want to see Jerusalem a beacon for coexistence. We want all that, but we don't want Israel to get away with its crimes, and we don't want this to be just another way for Israel to beautifying and legitimizing the injustice and the oppression that has been happening. We will not be the scapegoat, and we, as the people of Palestine, who have been struggling for all these decades, will never allow anyone to pay from our pockets. Our pockets are absolutely closed. So we have friends, we have the law, we have the morality, we have the steadfastness of our people, we have the struggle of our people everywhere, in Jerusalem, in the West Bank, in Gaza, as you see on a weekly basis everywhere, and we have the clarity about the future. So this is a bad moment, but it's not the entire story.
Ambassador Hossam Zumrad.
That interview is by Afshin Ratansi on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Almost all the funding this freely distributed program receives is from individual listener donations. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts like a listener in Albion, California did this week, along with the two listeners who give monthly automatic payments through PayPal. Many thanks. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The U.S. National Network on Cuba condemned the U.S. reinforcement of sanctions against the island. The Cuban Foreign Ministry issued a declaration against the U.S. pressure and blackmail against the Pan American Health Organization. Venezuela intercepted and disabled another U.S. plane in its national airspace. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The National Network on Cuba in the United States condemned the reinforcement by the Donald Trump administration of sanctions against the Caribbean island. In a statement, the coalition said that the measures announced last week by the Republican leader constitute new aggressions against the neighboring country and give continuity to the troubled restrictions previously imposed. Donald Trump announced on September 23rd that Americans would not be allowed to stay in government properties on the island or import alcohol and tobacco of Cuban origin, and that they would have to request specific licenses for certain categories of travel. The text noted that while these measures are purportedly aimed at financially harming the Cuban people, they also deny U.S. citizens' rights to travel, study, and interact with Cubans on both academic and personal levels. The Cuban Foreign Ministry issued a declaration on Wednesday condemning the Trump administration's pressure and blackmails against the Pan American Health Organization under the threat of foregoing the payment of its financial contribution. The United States, the main contributor to the PAHO budget, has forced the secretariat of that organization to accept what has been described as an external audit of PAHO's role in Brazil's More Doctors program, which involved the participation of thousands of Cuban professionals, said the declaration. The external audit is being conducted by a U.S. law firm, which was hired to issue an adjusted and predetermined evaluation within a term of 180 days, in conformity with the terms of reference that a select group headed by the United States had already defined. The declaration recalled that on November 14, 2018, Cuba decided to discontinue its participation in the More Doctors program in the face of the servile behavior of Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, who adopted a contemptuous and threatening attitude towards the Cuban personnel and in open disregard for PAHO and the agreement reached by that organization with Cuba. The foreign ministry said that the U.S. government's attempt to manipulate international and regional bodies to its will is disgusting.
Venezuelan Minister of Interior Relations, Justice and Peace, Nestor Revolal, told reporters that the interception of another U.S. plane in national airspace took place several days ago near the border with Colombia. On the social networks, the high command explained on Sunday that the radars of the Bolivarian National Armed Forces detected an illegal flight in Venezuelan airspace and, complying with defense protocols, intercepted the plane and disabled it. After 2 days of searching, the damaged aircraft was located on a clandestine runway on the banks of the Catatumbo River near the Colombian-Venezuelan border. Revolol reported that 11,000 liters of aviation fuel were also found, which could be used for this illegal criminal operation. This is the second U.S. plane detected violating Venezuelan airspace in recent weeks, which also coincides with a series of confrontations with paramilitaries on the border and the capture of an agent of the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, last week. The National Network of Citizens Initiatives for Peace and Against War, REDEPAS, and the Institute for Studies for Development and Peace, INDEPAS, have announced that a new massacre has occurred in Colombia, resulting in 3 deaths. According to INDEPAS, unknown men killed 3 people, whose identities are unknown, in the Horizonte neighborhood of the sector known as El Playón, in the western department of Chocó. According to images posted on social networks, the perpetrators approached the victims on a balcony of a house in Chocó. Venezuelan authorities have begun investigations into the case without offering any more details. According to a count by INDEPAS, from January to date so far this year, there have been 63 massacres in Colombia.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website has been rebuilt and is pretty well working up at radiohc.cu. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. This shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.